start off with Chaim Ches. Chaim Ches is one of the longer Tehillims. It's also one of the best ones. Many of the Midrashim that you've heard of when it comes to the Makos and stuff like that are in this, they're all based on this Tehillim. Many of them crazy Midrashim, but a different thing. So we're going to learn a lot about that. The entire idea behind it is that it's going to tell over the history of the people leading into David HaMelech and how important David HaMelech is. That's the point of this Tehillim. So look what it says. Maskel Asaf. So an enlightenment of Asaf. Hazina mitorasi. Listen, my people, to the terror that I say. Hatu Asacham limerfi. Turn your ears to the words of my mouth. It's going to show what David HaMelech is going to tell everybody. These are important words. They're not superfluous. They are important words that you have to hear in order for it to go through. Now, there's an allusion here to Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaalpeh. So, Hazina mitorasi. Number one, you got to listen to my Torah. That's the Torah Shebichtav. Hatu Asacham limerfi. To the words of my mouth. You have to, number one, see what I'm writing, and then you have to see what I would say outside of the writing. But that would be referring to the Torah Shebaalpeh. Yeah.
He's saying his own teachings, or he's talking about...
That's part of it. The remez is the Torah Shebaalpeh. Yeah, so to speak. Remember, this is Asaf, not David HaMelech. But the point is that he's trying to say, the remez is, there's another Torah out there, the Torah Shebaalpeh, that you also have to listen to, what's called Imrei Fi. That's the idea behind it. Here, we're going into four different things that a person needs in order to become a Baal Tochacha, somebody who can give most to others. Number one, you have to possess a fluent tongue. You have to know what to say at all times. Number two, you have to have great wisdom to know when to go up to a person and when not to go up to a person. Number three, you have to be able to repeat it hundreds of times if you need to, if that's what the person needs. And number four, right, he must practice what he preaches in order to go through. And that's what David HaMelech or Asaf was trying to say over here, how to be able to tell it over to somebody else. That's called the mashal pi. I'm going to open my mouth with a parable, with a mashal. I'm going to utter riddles about times long ago. What I'm going to spend time here is I'm going to tell you what has been beforehand and what you have done up until this time. Things that we have heard of and we know them. Things that our fathers have told us, right, about stuff of old. We are not going to hide from their children. Every later generation will tell over the praises of Hashem and His great strength, as well as all the wonders that it would do. We have a chazakah. The chazakah is fathers would not lie to their sons. Now, is it true? Yeah, for the most part it's true. It's a chazakah. Can there be a father who lies to his kid? Of course, there's always a jerk. But for the most part, fathers do not lie to their kids. And therefore, the assumption is that since we tell this over to our children, it's true. It must be true. And if I heard it from my dad, and my dad heard it from his dad, etc., it's got to be true all the way. By Yalkam Edus B'Yaakov, he established Edus within Yaakov, testimony for what they should and shouldn't do with Sarah Sam Yisrael. Torah was made among the Jews, Asher Tzivas Avosenim. That which he commanded our fathers to lo the Livneim, that they should know for their children what should be known out there as well. We are duty bound to tell this over to our children so that they know what has been done in the past, and etc., and like that. He also says that that's the Edus. We should be like Edom, saying we saw it with our own eyes, as if we've seen it with our own eyes. We should be so correct in it that we know what to tell over to our kids about all these miracles. So that the later generations that were not Zocha to see it themselves, they'll know about it. Bani Valedu, there will be children born, Yakum Misaf Lebneim. They'll get up and tell it over to their kids. Our job right now is to make it a future, you know, for all these people. You see, we haven't even started the Tehillim yet. Six psukim of introduction before we get anywhere. But it says still, they put their confidence in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They will not forget the works of God. Mitzvos Yisrael, and they'll keep the mitzvos over here. Now, they should put their confidence in Hashem, not in anything else. Now, kislam is a weird word. I translate it here as their confidence in Hashem. But a ksil, chav samach yud lamed, is a fool. Right? So what does it mean? Be'asimu belohim kislam? They should make their gods, in other words, the idols, into ksilim, into fools. They should not look at anything else but this. Enosh's problem, remember there is Adam, Shes, Enosh. Enosh's problem is that he kept thinking that all the different stars and sun and moon and all the works of God could also be worshipped because they're like the servants of the king. And he's right, but wrong at the same time. You can worship the servants of the king if the king's not around. But if the king's around, you can't worship the servant in the face of the king. That you can't do. So because the God is always around, you can't worship the son when Hashem is right here. That's a slap in the face to the king. So that's where Enosh was wrong, and there's no way to get around that. Lo yikavos endor so romora. We should not be as their fathers were. A generation that is so rare umora, wayward and rebellious, dor lo heichin libo. A generation that did not have their hearts set, will nemnas el ruho, and did not trust in God or believe in God with all their spirits the way that they should have.
Which generation?
That's the problem.
I'm talking about, there are a lot of those generations.
Everyone. Whatever generation that you could say, like, well, what happened to them? That's the generation that they were adored so real Mora. Were some generations worse than others? Of course, yeah. But there's always people that you look back at and you say, like, well, look what they did over here. We're flawed. We have deficiencies. And those people are not like B'nai Ephraim, Noshke Rami Keshes. They were children of Ephraim who were expert handlers of the bow. Noshke, meaning they were archers. Hafku B'yom Karov. They turned back on the day of battle. Now, yeah.
And I'm not saying the generation like this. I'm saying you always hear that you say the generation is playing the cover that kids have now, so their parents are different than the cover the parents have.
That's a little bit different. I definitely hear what you're saying.
It says rebellion. So I'm saying, are we talking about that?
No, the Dor Soro Mora is referring to the Dor Soro Mora against Hashem as opposed to himself. Yes and no. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. These people are against God even if they treated their parents well. That's the people that were
could have had, like, tripled up even, like,
very well could
to the top.
100%. Very well could. That's not it. So this pasuk of Ephraim, when a pasuk test over here, right? B'nai Ephraim, Noshke Rameka, what are these people the archers are referring to? So again, we're going back to Mitzrayim. This is going to start off 30 years before the Jews left Mitzrayim. 30 years beforehand, there was a guy by the name of Yignon. Yignon was the leader of a bunch of Ephraim, and at this time, according to the Medrash, Ephraim himself was still alive. It's not like Yignon was the only person. Yignon was one of the leaders, but Ephraim was still alive. And Yignon got up, and he talked to the other people of Ephraim, and he said, guys, it's time for us to leave. By his cheshbon, they were supposed to leave after 180 years, not after 210. They decided they were going to leave after 180 years. They got up and they said, you know what? We're going to go. We're going to go completely. We're going to leave. And we're going to leave Mitzrayim.
You know how long the prime was going.
No, we don't. We have no idea. But the only reason why is because in Divrei HaYom, where it mentions this story, in Divrei HaYom, where it says this, it says that Ephraim mourned them. This story, we don't know exactly what happened, but it says that Ephraim's children left early and they were killed by the Pleshtim. It says Ephraim mourned them many days. So it sounds like Ephraim is alive. Unless there's something of whatever it is. I'm sorry?
How do we know the 100 years?
So we don't. That comes from the Medrash. The timing of when they left comes from the Medrash. But if Ephraim was alive, which is a possibility, he would have been very old.
Only 30 years before they left?
30 years. Exactly. It's 30 years before they left. According to the Ramban, by the way, it happened in the 210th year after they left. And really, the Jews only left after 240 years. According to the Ramban, we're 30 years off in all of our cheshbonos. That's the Ramban's famous sheet and Parshas Bo, that God added 30 years to their slavery. It was supposed to leave at 210, but they didn't because they were so bad. That's the famous Ramban over there. But regardless, what happened with the prime is Yignon got up and he said, we're part of the royal lineage.
That fits into the story better.
Yeah, 100%, because they thought that it was the actual proper time to leave.
Yeah.
Right, 100%. Either way, it was either 180 or 210. They got up and they said, it's time for us to go. We've got to get out of here.
It says they were in the shrine for part of 30 years.
Well, that for sure, right? That for sure. We have to know what that means, like Sivos, right? That's where Rashi comes into play, right? Sivos
Bnei Yisrael.
There are Pashtunim that say that there were 430 Pashtunim, but nobody says it aside from like you're dealing with weird Rishonim. It's any more than one that says 430 was the actual years. So yeah, you're dealing with that. Regardless, right? So what happens? They left Mitzrayim, and one of two things happened. It depends if you look at Pirkei to Rabbi Eliezer, or if you look at the Medrash Rabbah, or really the Medrash Talmud right over here, either the Mitzrayim chased after them and eventually killed them, or the Pleshtim came out of that area and killed them when they were on their way to Eretz Yisrael. Either way, their bones were scattered throughout the desert. And it was for this reason that Hashem didn't want the Jews to go up to Eretz Yisrael this way. Because if they would go this way, they would see the bones of Shevet Ephraim in the desert. And said, instead, we're going around the other way.
What area would the bones spread out? mean, we could say, like, okay, fine. Well,
near the Negev. Yeah, near the Negev. Near the Negev. That area was going to be dangerous. You know, with this many people going through, that area was dangerous for them to go through. But that's why Yibishalach Paro is Ambalo. Now, Kamalo King Derek Arts Plishtin. Hashem didn't want them to go to Derek Arts Plishtin, Kikaravu, even though it was so close. Kiamalo King, because Hashem said, maybe the people will be upset when they see the war and they'll go back to Mitzrayim. What's the war? The war, says Yonas Menuziel, was the war of Ephraim with all these people out there. And this is what we're referring to. They turned back the brilliant Ephraim people. They were so good with all their bows and arrows and everything that they did, their archers, and everything they had. Hashem wasn't with them. They all died. Every single one of them were killed. How many? 20,000, 30,000, however many went. I know Pirkei Rebbe says 200,000 Ephraimites. We don't know what that means, but a lot of people died on that day. Why? Because they didn't keep the birth of Hashem. Hashem said, do not leave until I tell you to go, until Pakot Bakadati, and they didn't listen. It was the Russell man of Lechas. They refused to walk in the law of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's even worse, because Yosef told them not to leave until Pakot Bakadati. Yosef was the one that said it. And Ephraim, from Yosef, he decided to leave early. That's how bad it was. They forgot God's great deeds and his wonders that he had shown them. That he did wondrous things for their fathers, Barak's Mitzrayim, and so on. In the land of Mitzrayim, by the land of Soan. Unfortunately, I don't know what Soan is. Miamloi said it was the city of the kings of Egypt. One would have to do a little bit of research on that, why it was called Soan. What is it? Where is that city? What city was it? That's the problem. I just don't know what it is. But here it says, Negros Osafela, the Schus Avos allowed them to have these plane that happened over here. And some say, the Medrash says over here, that the Avos themselves got up to watch Kriyas Yamsuf happen. That the Avos themselves, you know the line? Ki go ga'ah? Says the Medrash. I don't know if it's a Medrash. It's the Remez, and the Baal Turim brings it down. Ga'o stands for Gimel Avos Ha'olam. That the three Avos themselves got up and watched it. Unbelievable. The Amo is listed in the 40 miracles that happened, the 50 miracles that happened at Kriyas Yamsuf. By the way, that's that. Some say that the field of Soan is reference to the miracle. Remember the miracle that happened over there? There were children from Bnei Yisrael who were born in Egypt, and they were born in the field, so they wouldn't be cast into the river. They were swallowed up by the ground and then spat out at some point later on. Sedei Soan are these fields where those children were born and they came out. And that's it's for sure, yeah, 100%. The wording is Yatsitsu Ke'esev Perach or something like that. It's a pasuk in Tehillim, but I forgot what the word is exactly. Boka Yom Be'Avi Reim. Yeah, for sure. Boka Yom Be'Avi Reim. Hashem split the sea and crossed them through. He stood the waters like a pillar. The two waters like a pillar in front of them, like mounds, seen by all, visible to all the kings, that they were all scared. Then he led them in a cloud by day, and all night long in a pillar of fire. Now, it's interesting. The cloud had two purposes: to show them the way as a guide and to protect them from the heat and the dryness around there. The fire had three purposes. It was to act as a guide and to give them light and to give them heat. Either way, they had all that from the clouds and the fire. Now, I don't know, and this whole tale is a little bit questionable. Why? It mentions the Anani HaKavod after it mentions that there was Kriyas Yamsuf. The Anani HaKavod were there before Kriyas Yamsuf. They got them as soon as they left Mitzrayim. So really we should have mentioned the Anani HaKavod in the fire before they went through, but it doesn't mention that way. Regardless, Yivaket Tzurim Bamidbor, he then split the rocks in the desert by Yashk Kishoymais Rabba, and they gave to drink like there was multitudes of these Rabba, many, many people, right? So you can say either many people got fed through those deeps, or there was many waters that came out, that the waters came out in such a huge fashion and went around. One Maimer Chazal that I once saw says that Moshe Rabbeinu hit the rock in Chorev and the waters flowed all the way to Rephidim. That it went miles and miles away, that Moshe Rabbeinu had to walk all the way in order to hit the rock, and then, remember, the first time he did hit the rock, only the second time was he told to speak to the rock. But the first time in Mishalach, he hit the rock, and it went all the way out there. Regardless, there's no question that this was miraculous, that there was a rock that traveled with them wherever they were and brought water to them wherever they went. That was a massive miracle that is impossible for us to understand. Even though in the Jerusalem Zoo now, there is the Moses rock, You see it? Right by the edge, all the way in one corner, there's like this huge rock that has water flowing from underneath it. They call it the Moses Rock.
Is it a spring?
It must be a spring from underneath. It's not coming from the rock itself. It's coming from underneath. Oh, that might be it, but it's not. It's not. I did quite a bit. It did not work. Now, Yossi, you have no idea how much stuff I've done at the zoo. I have literally no idea. Yeah, no.
They won't let
not anymore. Not anymore. Hey, once they stop,
picture on it.
You dye your beard.
No, it's so funny, by the way.
You dye your beard to
know
when you go.
What do you mean? No, they know me now because at times I've been mistaken for Rabbi Slifkin before, and I probably will be mistaken for Rabbi Slifkin again. And it's happened many times where I've gone in and they're just like, "Are you the?" And I'm like, "I am, but not back out."
Once you speak, you can tell them.
That's that. Yeah, that's 100%. My Yotzi knows when he saw it. He brought out streams from the rock, by Yori Kanaro's Mayim, and they ran down like rivers. Now here is the famous medrash that the rock did not just have one little stream and that was it, and it led into a pond. According to Maimari Chazal, the rock led into 12 different streams, and each stream surrounded a shevet of Klal Yisrael. That's how far the rock went with all of these. That's what I mean. Yotzi knows when he saw it, that there were rivers that came through over here. And notice, by the way, at first we called it a sewer, and now we call it a sela. Really, the truth is, it's the same thing. But there's a difference in how God refers to the tzur. Tzur stands for tzadik baralo, how a Kadosh Baruch Hu appears in the bad and still is still allows things to happen. Sela is just a simple answer, a simple word for what we use as a rock itself. That's referred to over here. Some say that it's referring to the two times. One is in the second year of the Midbar, the first year of the Midbar, sorry. One is in the 40th year of the Midbar. Two different rocks over here. Regardless, by Yosef Old Lach Tolai. But that didn't help. They continued to do evil to him, Lamros Alyum Bitzia, and they rebelled against HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the desert itself. Once they got what they needed, then they rebelled again. They tested God in their hearts, Rishol Ochol and Afsham, by asking for food and saying, "All right, God, you gave us water. How about some food now? What kind of food can you give me the Midbar?" And that was ridiculous. We know that Reuben and Gad had a tremendous amount of cattle. Why wouldn't they have slaughtered their own cattle? But they were so not, they just couldn't think that way. They wanted to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for something. Now, the famous medrash, you've all heard this muscle that's given, a son who's riding on his father's shoulders. And he says to his father, "Please give me that apple." He doesn't say please. "Give me that apple. Give me that pear. Give me that banana." And his father gives him everything. And they pass by a person, and the kid turns to that guy and he says, "Do you know where my father is? I have no idea where my father is." The father's like, takes the kid, throws him down on the ground, and he says, "You don't know where I am? I've been giving you everything, and I've been carrying you on my shoulders up until now. And you're asking where I am?" That was B'nai Yisrael in the Midbar. That they're getting everything from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and then they're saying, "Where's God? Where's God for me?" And the father's like, "What in the world? I keep giving you everything." That's the line. That's what it means that a malik came at that moment, because they were asking for a silly thing. By Dabur Belukim, they spoke against God. They tested him. "Do you think God could make a set a table in the desert? Let's see what kind of a feast we can have over here. Is that possible?" Haini Katsurvia Zubamayim. Sure. He hit a rock and he brought forth water. And there's rivers that are flowing. Hagam Lechem Yuchal Teis. You think God could also bring down some bread? In Yochan Sher Lamo, can he bring some meat for his people? Which is a ridiculous taina. They just mentioned the greatest miracle that got Moshe Rabbeinu hit a rock in the desert and made the water flow out of nowhere. And they're like, "Oh yeah, well, is there bread?" It's the silliest thing out there. But that's what happens. I hate to say it this way, but I've said it three times this week already. B'nai Yisrael does not do well when we're rich. We do really, really well when we're poor. You hear about all these stories when we're poor and things don't go badly. When we're wealthy, we just don't do well.
There is some good also when we're wealthy.
Oh, without a question.
We have a ton of tzedakah.
Without a question.
Either religious or otherwise.
And this generation may be totally different from the generations of old. Maybe, in the amount of tzedakah that we give. But even so, things are wasted. Things are totally and utterly wasted. And that's what I mean by we wasted on something. Now, again, I'm not bashing anybody because, you know, I don't know what would be. It's not my challenge. I don't know if you knew, but my paycheck here is not what you thought it was. It's not the seven figures that you thought. It's a little bit, you know. I don't have that challenge. That's not my challenge. So I don't know what it's like, you know. Like, what would I do if I had that much money? Probably make a fish tank the size of this room. I would convert the entire room into a fish. That's probably what I would do.
In a new house.
Yeah, that's what I would try. Therefore, God heard it, and he got angry. That's the word by Yisabor. The ish niska b'Yakov, a fire was kindled against Yaakov. It got off all of Yisrael. Not only that, but an anger went against Yisrael. Now we all know the difference in Yisrael and Yaakov is Yisrael is when B'nai Yisrael doing great, the tzaddikim and tzaddikim and tzaddikim. Yaakov is when they're not doing as great. So yeah, I understand there was a fire in Yaakov that people from Yaakov were killed, and that could be referring to Kibros HaTaiva, Tavera, when there were fires that actually killed the people for what they had done when they wanted a little bit more. But the idea is Gam Af Allah B'Yisrael, there was Af going upon the Jews. Here's the pshat. HaKadosh Baruch Hu caused even the tzaddikim to sin. Even the tzaddikim went through. Whether it's referring to Shlumi ben Tzuri Shadoi and what he did as Zimri, whether it's referring to Nachshon ben Aminadav, who the Medrash says was one of the people who were mislaining him, they were complaining to Moshe Rabbeinu and died, whatever it was, even the tzaddikim were affected by all these complaints that eventually the people said, because they didn't trust God, so they did not trust that his salvation would come forth. So he commanded the skies above, and the doors of the heavens opened up. He heard their tinnitus, and he didn't agree with them, but he gave it to them anyway. He allowed for the dew to come down together with the mud, but more than that, he opened up the shchakim, all the skies, and says, and he gave them the mud to eat, and the food of the skies he gave to all of them. Like the dew, except this is manifested in some white marshmallowy sapichis bidvosh, a wafer filled with honey. That's what came down, which makes sense. I'm sorry? So, yes, because bashlu baparur, right? They were able to bake it, whatever.
They roasted it.
They didn't have the s'mores. They didn't have s'mores. No, they didn't have the graham crackers. They didn't have the graham crackers. What? But there was. I have no idea. I literally have no idea. The famous Chofetz Chaim, it's one of my favorite Chofetz Chaims, one of the favorite lines from Rav Schwab. Rav Schwab said when he went to the Chofetz Chaim for that one Shabbos, he has like 8 stories of what happened when he visited the Chofetz Chaim Rav Schwab. One of the stories was, he went to him, Rav Schwab said to the people around, he said, what did the mun taste like if you didn't think of anything? What did the mun taste like if you didn't think of anything? So that's what everybody said. He said, something would be rushed. The Chofetz Chaim said, no. If you didn't, he said, no. If you didn't think of anything, it tasted like nothing. Because Ruchnius has no taste. You have to make it gashmi in order for it to be a taste. That's one of my favorite Chofetz Chaims. That is, if you thought about it, it tasted like something. If not, it was nothing.
Why?
It tasted like air when you put it down your throat.
But it's still
see, that's the funny thing. According to the Miyam Lois, and this is back in all the way around the Shabbat, if you didn't get full, nobody was ever full. They were never full. But we say over here, right, we're going to say it in a pasuk right over here, that they got satisfied from it, that there was lasova. They were satisfied. But the Miyam Lois there said that you were never full, you were always hungry, which is why they complained after having the month.
That wouldn't contradict the premise that you were satisfied. Maybe you were in like stuff.
The tail, you mean? So maybe that's what it means. So it's so fun. Meaning you got all the nutrients and the stuff that you wanted. You could have one pill nowadays. So you could have all the iron, all the vitamins that you possibly need, but you wouldn't be satisfied at all. You survive, but that wouldn't be great. The people are just surviving. Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I want to go back for a second, by the way. By Sach Chokim Imal without Sashmayim Pasach, the Gemara and Sanhedrin darshans from over here, it's not directly, it's indirectly, that the Dor HaMidbor, the generation of the Midbor, doesn't have a chelik in Olam Haba. Why? Because their chelik in Olam Haba happened during the Midbor. They got it there. He opened up the Shemayim for them and gave them their chelik of Olam Haba at that time, and therefore they have no chelik. There's no transformation for them. There's nothing left. They're dead, and that's it. There's nothing left for them. They are not involved in
Olam Haba. I'm saying, so then, what is it? I'm saying, what?
Nothing.
They're null and void. That's a mess.
Either their neshamos are bustled to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, so it's as if they're all one with Hashem now, so they have no individual minds, or yes, they see everybody else with all the fun that they had, and they are not taking a part.
That sounds worse than that.
The worst punishment you could possibly imagine. For people on that level, that's what it was. But that is a shita that they didn't get because of everything they did in the midpour. The miraglim, the egos of, etc. Everything out there. And that was the punishment, yeah. The mud. That's the line. The mud being brought down to them was the opening up of the heavens. And that's what it means over here. So now it says, lechem abirim al-chalish. They ate the bread of strong men. This is referring to the mighty angels, really. Angelic bread. He sent them provisions so that they would be satisfied and filled up with this over here. And that's what they ended up having over here. It's what Moshe Rabbeinu ate in Shemayim. It's what the Malachim have. What does that mean? Malachim don't eat. Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't eat. Whatever that means, that they survived. Moshe Rabbeinu for 40 days and 40 nights in Shemayim. Actually, 120 days, 120 nights. And whatever it means that the Malachim were there, somehow they survived. That's the month. That's what the month is. Yakta called the Mashemayim Meinayim, but he was those same month. He caused the east wind to blow in the heavens, and he brought it through the south wind in its full strength. It was not a natural wind that came through. And he brought down upon them like dust the she'er, the meat that they asked for. And like the sand of the seas, he brought down birds. Birds, as we know of, the slug. That's what he brought down for them. The quail, or whatever it was. Now, it is interesting that there is a Gemara that says that the slug tasted like fish. Gemara and Sota, that it tasted like fish. It was something like that. There's another Medrash that says that it tastes like every meat that you could. Every meat that you could possibly think of. Now, I've only had duck, I've had chicken, I've had turkey, right? I've even had goose. That I've been able to have. I've never had quail before. I have absolutely no idea. I can't imagine that it tastes that much like meat. It still seems to me that it would be bird meat.
You guys go to one of the meals where they serve like giraffe.
Yeah, where they just ate shallots a couple years ago. Like they did. They had quail. They had a bunch of quail there. Right? Pheasants and stuff like that. I'd like to have it. I don't know. I can't imagine there is something. Of course there can be. But what it was, I don't know. I can't tell you. I'm sorry? You know, it's funny. There's a question whether you are able to taste quail. I know Sfardim can, right? But there's a shiloh whether we have the Mesorah for it. Whether Ashkenazim have the Mesorah for it. One of the things you need by the birds is the Mesorah. Yeah. They say that peacocks are kosher, right? But we have no Mesorah for it. I don't think anybody has the Mesorah for it. It might be the Tamanim have it or whatever it is. But it's a big shiloh. You guys are fine with it. We'll have you step to the whole chuva on it. What?
Peacocks. Really, that must be
good. Yeah, the big one. Yeah. Like a duck. Like a duck. Think of a duck. Yeah. It's, I don't know how much.
I mean, a lot of birds are sort of, we don't know about.
I should say, you know, pea fowl. Because technically, the females and the males, whatever, but pea fowl are all kosher. Yeah. Ostriches are probably the batyana of the Torah, which means they're not kosher. Most probably. Although the way it's described, the batyana in the Gemara, the fowl does not sound like an ostrich.
That probably
because
would be
one of the most, the biggest characteristics of the batyana would be its extremely long neck, long legs, and a huge eggs. And none of that is described by when they describe the batyana, when they describe it in the Midrashim and the Gemara. So you think, I mean, that's the first thing you say about an ostrich. And not only an ostrich, there was a bird that was alive not too long ago, and it was definitely alive in the times of the Gemara, in the times of whatever, that's known as the elephant bird. The elephant bird was about two times the size of the ostrich. It was huge. Man, it wasn't that much longer ago. There's also another one. What's the other one? There's like a moa, the giant moa, right? That also, it only stinks like 300 years ago, 400 years ago, right? So they would have been around. Well, I mean, they were, eventually their eggs were so huge, people ate all of their eggs. And, it's terrible. Yeah, turkey's a big shiloh, Listen, Rav Chaim, listen, we eat turkey. That's Minnesota. Yeah. Oh, they did start eating it? There's one famous one. So, Herschel Schachter will not eat turkey. Right. You won't eat? You won't eat dairy at all?
Unless it goes with the milk is covered, you will not have dairy.
Because he's not going to call up your soul.
We had my yeshiva once.
What do his kids do? That's what I'm saying. So if his kids are not, so that's just a chumrah of his. That's not a p'tak alaka.
Turkey, I think the milk, I'm not sure. I think one of the sons does keep the cat.
We'll have to see. That's the key. The key is to know that. Do you find it?
Sure,
you look up giant moa. That's probably the better one. M-O-A. Just M-O-A. By Yapa Bakarmachaneu. So the fell, no, they're different. The elephant bird is a little bit older. The Yapa Bakarmachaneu, it fell all around the camp. Some people in Mishkanos have all around their dwellings right over there. Here's the awesome part. They didn't have to go after the slug. The slug was right there in front of them. They wanted slug. It was literally right there. They just pick it up with their own hands. By Yoko Vizbamo, they ate it. They were very satisfied. They got their taiva. They received their taiva. But you know what? What happens when you get your taiva? You have another taiva that comes in. What's up? Yeah. I don't know if that's it.
That looks that much bigger.
Oh, that's probably it. Yeah.
This looks so much bigger.
So, Lo Zoromi Taivasam, Odokomi, it's huge. But yeah, Lo Zoromi Taivasam, they wouldn't stray away from their tithes, owed up on the DM, while their food was still in their mouths. They still sat there and they said, we could use a little bit of more meat. That's what they were saying. There was a great anger of Hashem that went upon him, and he killed their fat ones, knocking down the young men. But that didn't stop them. They kept sitting. They didn't care about his wonders. They died in one breath. All their days were gone, and their years like terror. There was a plague that went down. According to one medrash, there was a plague that happened when they ate the slug that the people overate. And they ate so much they became sick and they died. In fact, there's a Balaturim that says that when the slug came down, it sliced off some of their heads. The people that were standing in the way of the slug went straight in and killed them, according to the Balaturim, which is an awesome
medrash. How do you explain they ate too much?
That was another person.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Some of them. Oh, no, those people died. Yeah. Those people died pretty badly. Yeah. When he killed them, and that's where it comes from, then they went back and they davened to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They did tshuva after it. They remember that God is their rock, the Elyon Golam, and the God up above is the Redeemer. And they tricked him with their mouths, and they lied with their tongues. We're so sorry, God. We didn't mean to do it this way. Had we only known, but their hearts were not with them. They did not remain faithful in their covenant itself. Wait a second.
God.
Of course. They did it. But of course, they did it. They're like, exactly. They attempted to fool God. But God knows exactly what's going on. The wording over here is, they didn't speak with total devotion, but God cannot be misled because he knows their hearts. That's the idea. But nonetheless, he is merciful. He forgives all of their sins. He doesn't want to destroy. Quite often, he will allow his anger to wrath to go out there. And nothing will stir up all of his rage. The Ego Zav is a good example of that. But the Racham of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always going to be able to go over here and to be able to help Bnei Yisrael. You might recognize that pasuk. Maybe you've seen that one before. This one is a famous one.
Where is it?
Yeah, it's like in all over. Pretty sure it's in Golat Zion somewhere. Anyway, he remembered. God remembered that they're just flesh and blood. They're a spirit that goes and will never return. And that's the idea. Obviously, when we say Holech V'lo Yashuv, that it'll never return, that sounds like there's no Tchias HaMeisim, which is a possibility for these people over here. But nonetheless, there's two answers that they give over here. Number one, it means it will never return by natural means. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't just kill them because naturally they'll be gone from the world and they'll only come back by Tchias HaMeisim. The second one is that their evil nature will never come back ever again. That although their bodies will come back, the Yetzirah is gone. And Pasuk Mem, Kam Yamru V'Mibor, how much they rebelled against God in the desert. Yativu B'Shimon, they sat in God in the desert itself. How horrible it was, how much they sat in Yashuv and as well. But they went back and they tested God again. So she told Yisru. They set limits to how much God can do. They did not remember God's power on the day that he redeemed them from the enemies and all the crazy things he did. Actually, something Mitzrayim, most of his state, so on. That he made a Mitzrayim, his signs and wonders in the land of Tzoan, which sounds like it was the capital of Egypt. That's really what it sounds like over here. Now, the difference between an Os and a Mopes, that goes on. You can get about 100 different explanations based on the Haggadah, the difference between an Os and a Mopes. Simplistically, an Os is a sign that we tell you about beforehand, and then it happens. A Mopes is something that happens on its own. For example, Dam and Svardea, they warned Paro what was going to be. Kenim happened on its own. Kenim, there was no warning beforehand. Arov and Dever, they went and they said, Paro, this is what's going to happen. Shin just happened on its own. Meaning Moshe Rabbeinu had to do something, but there was no forewarning. So that's the difference between an oath, a sign that what you're saying is correct, and a moment.
No, there are really only 8
Why?
No, it's because the Makot were all mostly, but the oath was like a sign to bring in, and they weren't as severe as the
also 2 Osios? Which were the 2?
I thought I was, but it was this shot, and it's a very, very tough forest from Italy. It's a very, very pure shot. Anything else.
That's strange because the Haggadah says not that way.
Right, but the Haggadah is not, it was written later. It's not.
Elu Esther Makos.
Right, but I'm saying that he was just bringing another...
Okay, I hear you. You mean that I thought it was written before?
No, I thought it was written before.
Right? Oh, okay.
But
yeah.
And
it's another shot. By Apple Gudamio Ram. Now we're getting to the Makos. He turned their rivers into blood, the nose lamb, by Yustayim, and their drinks so that they could not drink it whatsoever. Now, obviously, the Nile River was the god of Egypt. Knocking down the god of Egypt was there. But not only that. Anybody remember why they got blood? What was the Midah Kenegan, why the blood went into the river itself? Because it killed the babies, right? They killed the babies. That was the reason why. Can you imagine? A superstitious people that believed in magic and the gods punishing them in omens. They threw babies into the river, and the blood of the babies fills the river so that they can't drink it. Fills their god, so to speak. That was the most super... They could not deal with it. Bishalapham Arov by your claim. Arov was sent against them and consumed them. And then Tsardeya came and destroyed them as well. What happened with the frogs? Let's go with the frogs for a second. What happened with the frogs? The frogs were little babies reincarnated into frogs running up to the Egyptians and croaking and making their noise.
It's frogs, not the crocodiles and stuff like that.
Nobody says it was only crocodiles. It's always frogs. The question is, did it include crocodiles, right? Then it sees in the Malbim possibly include crocodiles, although there are the portion that say it couldn't be, because then it would say that they actually killed them, because the crocodiles would have killed them. Regardless, right, that's that. It's interesting, if you notice, Arov comes before Tsardeya. Why would you put Arov before Tsardeya? What's the shot behind that? So the simple explanation says to me on the ways that since the wild beast devoured the Egyptians and caused death, and the Dam caused them to die as well, they put them together, while Tsardeya only was an annoyance, and therefore it's separate from that. Next to that is Vayitim Echostil Yibulam. The locusts took hold of all their produce, that's Arbet. Vayikiyam La'arbet, and all their toil went to the locusts themselves. We put it right after because they also caused damage. Tsardeya and Arbet caused damage. Then the Barad knocked down their grapevines, and their sycamore trees were destroyed by a layer of frost. Chanamal could be referring to a large hailstone. It could be referring to a type of locust. Whatever it is, that's what's going to happen over here. And again, this is referring to destruction.
And this is during Mitzrayim.
This is, obviously.
That's what I'm saying. So how would it, you said frost at first?
Frost. Yeah, remember?
Barad.
Barad was not hail. Hail that had fire and ice to it. According to R.A. Kaplan, I'm sorry?
Frost is normally the pink tree silver itself.
The frost from the, what's it called, hit the tree and destroyed the trees. According to the English Mamloids written by Rav Aryeh Kaplan, he says it was a meteor shower. It was a meteor shower that hit. Yeah, that was what Barad was. The fire and the ice together. That was Rav Aryeh Kaplan. He writes it in the back. I ask here, the Barad B-Rum, he gave over to Barad all of their cattle, Miknayim or Shuffin, and the fiery bolts hit all of the cattle as well. We all know what that means, because we know what that means, that everybody who left their animals out, they were killed by the Barad itself. The hail came through them and destroyed all of them over here. Also, Rishuffin might not be fiery bolts. It might be referring to huge vultures that came down and grabbed the carcasses before the Egyptians could drag the carcasses in, so at least they'll be able to eat the dead animals. God sent his absolute anger, Ever Bazam Mitzara, his anger and pain, I don't know how to translate it, whatever you want to call it, Mishakas Malachi Rayim, and sent evil messengers against them over here. Now, we're almost done, but let's go, we're going to come back to this in a second. He follows Nasib Lapo, he leveled out a path for his wrath. Lo Kosach Mimavis Nafsham, he did not stop from killing them. The Chayosam Ledever Yiskir, and their wild animals were given over to be plagued. Right? That's Dever over here. That plague was given. Yaakov Bechor B'Mitzrayim, then he killed every Bechor in Mitzrayim. Rashis Ainim, the first of their labor, Baal Echom, in the tents of Chom over here. The reason why Chom is mentioned, because the despicable deed that he himself did, we want to remind them that the Egyptians are from them and how disgusting they were. And we've heard over here, by Yaakov Bechor B'Mitzrayim, is a reference to also Makas Bechoros, where the Bechors stood up to their fathers and said, let the Jews go, we don't want to die. And there was a civil war in Mitzrayim before Makas Bechoros ever happened. where the Makom Bechor was ever happened itself. And then also the line of ears by Yah, that he himself did the Bechor Mitzvah. Unlike the other Makos, which were done by the Halachim, this is done by God itself. Now, if you'll notice, we were missing three Makos. Three Makos were missing here. Kinim, Choshech, and Shechin. None of those three are mentioned over here. So some say that the reason why they weren't mentioned is because they are a little bit different. Kinim, Shechin, and Choshech are the third of each of the sets of Makos. Damsvernea Kinim, Arov Dever, Shechin, Barad Arbe, Choshech. And the third Maka was not forewarned to them beforehand. It was a Moface, as we said before. And therefore, because they weren't told about it beforehand, therefore it seemed like it only happened. It was an extra Maka. We know it's an extra Maka, but the Jews might not have seen it that way. And therefore, that third Maka was not included because that wouldn't have been a proof necessarily. Others say that they're all hinted to in this pasuk of Karona Po, Evra, Bozam. That all of those refer to Choshech, Shechin, and Kinim together. I will tell you that in this plague, Choshech, Shechin, and Kinim, all three of them occurred at the same time. During Kinim, there was also boils on the Egyptians, and it was dark. During Shechin, there was also lice, and it was dark. And during the darkness, they were still plagued by the lice and by the boils. So all three of them came at the same time. And there's an Itzutishim from Shem Shem Yastropolia that puts it all together and says one of the craziest things. He says, if you take these words, Kinim, Shechin, and Choshech, okay? So it goes like this. Choshech. Okay. Shechin. And Kinim. If you look at this line over here, you see Choshech, Choshech, Shechin, Shechin, Kinim, Kinim. He says they're all connected to one another, and that however you read it, this way, that way, Choshech, Shechin, Kinim, Choshech, Shechin, Kinim, that they're all connected to one another. And therefore, all three of them occurred with one another, and it wasn't a coincidence that they were the third set, a third of the each set of Makos. They went together in that way.
It's not a
remez. A remez is very hard. It's the closest thing we have to Kabbalah. You can't just make up stuff like that. It's like either you know it or you're.
But I mean, you could. In theory,
anybody can figure it out.
How do you think of if I take the letters and just write them down?
Remember that piece that I give you every year from the institution? The whole thing that you say on Pesach night, that got a night, right? That whole thing over there, yeah, you have it. Regular Agadah have it right now. But that thing right there is written by the Nitzitzit Shemshin. All of that. It's so simple once he explains it to you, but the pshat is that you're able to figure it out. Like, the figuring it out takes so much koach, right? That's the idea behind it. So yes, I agree with you in a way. I don't think normal people can come up with something like that. Yes, there are people who luck out and are able to get it. I just think these types of Ramazim. I'm sorry? So, Kinim in the Torah, right. Kinim in the Torah, when it says the word Kinim, it's Kup Yud Nun Mem. But there is another word right after it, Batihi Hakinam Chaf Nun Mem, and I think that's what he refers to over here. That's what he's talking about. Anyway, Vayasa Katzonamo. Then he made the people travel like sheep. And he brought them about like flocks in the Midbar. Oh, you know what? I also forgot one thing. In that pasuk Nun, if you look, it says Lo Chosach Mimavas Nafsham. A lot of people say Chosach is a reference to Choshech. Okay, whatever. Regardless, Vayam King Lebatach Velo Pakadu. He led them to safety, and they weren't afraid. So like Yamsu saw Yom, and their enemies, he covered them up by the Yamsu. That wasn't a big deal. Like the Yamok Vulkacho, he brought them to the borders of his holy area. How does that come to the Amino? The mountain to which your right hand had already acquired. I'm assuming this refers to Har Sinai, although it's possible it's referring to the way the Akedah was in Har Moriah. Like Garshim Namgayim, he drove out all of the nations, and he brought them into the actual inheritance of the Ayashkim Baalayim Shifti Yisrael. He brought them each to their tents. All the Shvatim Bnei Yisrael according to where they're supposed to be, and they tested again by Yamos Lukemayon, and they rebelled against God Most High. They dose of Loshmar, and they did not keep his mitzvahs properly. Therefore, Shiloh, the area where the Mishkan was destroyed. They turned back and they rebelled like the their fathers, Nephu, Kikesh, Srimiya, they were turned aside like a tricky bow, like a bow that keeps moving around and you can't really pull it well. That's what happened to them. They provoked God to anger with their bamos. And they angered God. They made him jealous with all their idols. God heard it and he was angry. He was very disgusted. Disgusted by what happened with Bnei Yisrael. He forsook the Mishkan of Shiloh, the oil where the Shekhinah dwelled among the men itself. And he gave it to captivity. The Mishkan was captured in the days of Eli when Hophni and Pinchas went to war together with the Mishkan itself, with the Aron Kodesh. It was captured with Sibar, and its splendor was given over to the enemies, to the enemies that were known as the Plishtim. And then he gave the people over to the sword by Nachal So Yisabor. And God was furious against his inheritance for going against him, and the Plishtim won. The young men were consumed by fire. The young maidens did not sing any songs. That's a shot, by the way. The young maidens were not killed because the Plishtim did not fight the Jews in their land. It was Hophni and Pinchas, as well as the warriors, that went out to the Plishtim and lost over there. That's what ended up happening. So the girls still survived, but there was no one to get married to. The Kohanim, they fell by sword. That's Hophni and Pinchas, the two sons of Eli. And the widows did not cry. If we remember, at the end of Shoftim, Eli's daughter-in-law, right? I forgot what her name was. She named her kid Ichabod when he was born. And she was crying not over the children that were killed, right? Her husband that was killed, but over the Aron Kodesh that was taken. That tells me one of two things. Either Hophni and Pinchas were not very good husbands, or these women are so unbelievably holy, they accepted God's decision as true, but they couldn't accept that the Aron Kodesh was taken. One of the two. Then God awoke like someone who was sleeping, Hashem. Like a strong man rousing himself from the wine that he had. All of a sudden, God woke up as if from a drunken stupor. And he knocked down the enemies backward. And he gave them unbelievable disgrace. Lasting disgrace. He despised the tent of Yosef. He did not want the choice of Ephraim whatsoever. Shiloh is over. No longer will the Mishkan be set in the tribe of Ephraim and near Yosef. Even though Shiloh was around that area, no longer is Yosef going to be chosen. Instead, he chose Shevet Yehuda as Har Tzion Asher Ahev, Har Tzion, which is Har Moriah, that he now loves. That was the area that was chosen. Even Kamo Ramin Mikdasho, he built the base of Mikdash up to the heights, like the ground, he founded it forever. And David Amalek was Zocha to make the foundation. Shlomo Amalek was able to make the heights of what it's going to be over here.
Wait, what is he blaming all of Yosef for?
I think the amount of sin that Yosef did caused them to lose Mishkan Shiloh eventually. That's what caused them to lose.
But is it only Yosef, or is it Yosef as the leader of all the 10 tribes of the north?
Well, Shiloh was in Shevet Yosef. So if they deserved to keep it, they would have kept it. They must have done something that was terribly wrong.
Right, but I feel like it would go beyond that, because weren't they, Shiloh goes from the time, but wasn't also Yeravim Ben Nevat also keeping it?
There's no question. But Yeravim Ben Nevat wasn't here yet.
No, I understand.
Right.
Also, but again, there was some sort of leadership.
I'll tell you, in Shoftim, Ephraim twice gets very angry because after the war is over, by Yiftach and then by Gido, they say, "Hey, why didn't you call us to battle?" Right? The both times they were like, "What's wrong with you?" And Ephraim was a very strong nation. And by, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know if I'm right about this. Gido's like, "Oh, who's like you? You guys are so strong. We're so sorry we didn't invite you." Right? Yiftach, he's like, "You're all going to die," and he killed all of Shevet. Well, not all, but many people. David Ephraim for being so insolent to him and not coming to war in the first place. So apparently there was something wrong with Ephraim. I don't know what, though.
I think Ephraim, though, was like the leader. There was a tension between Yosef,
who got
the brush from Yaakov, and
Yehuda.
So it seems like Yosef is like a representative of the other tribe.
Especially if the Mishkan is in Shiloh. Right? Especially if it's there. That's when God chose David his servant. He took him from the folds of sheep that were in the area of Me'akra Alois, following the ewes. That's what David would do. Now he shepherded Yaakov, his nation, and Yisrael, Nachlasu, and Bnei Yisrael as well. That's what they did. And King David HaMelech, was a perfect example. By Yirin Tisom Levavo, he shepherded them according to the perfection of his heart, and according to the skill of his hands, he led them. Once God saw that he was a perfect shepherd, Hashem said, "That guy, I want him to rule my nation. That's the guy that I want in charge. A person who's such a good shepherd is going to be a great leader." leader of Bnei Yisrael. He wouldn't need a rod, because a proper leader shouldn't have to hit the people. They should be able to be good on their own. He would be perfect in that area. That's the pshat behind it. Alright guys, now we're going to get an ayin test. I don't know if we'll be able to finish it, but let's start this right now. Ayin test is big, but ayin test is one of my favorite ones as well. So that ayin test is done. Ayin test is Mizmor L'Asaf. I've got a song for Asaf. Elohim bo goyim benachal Asafa. God, the goyim come, the nations come into your inheritance. Timos Echol Kachecha. They make your holy Echol Tomei. Somebody's Yerushalayim Le'iyim. They make your shrine into a heap of rubble. This is obviously referring to the Churban HaBayis, which Asaf or David HaMelech could not have been around to see. They wouldn't have seen it. But they're seeing in the future what was going to be the future destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, turning everything into absolute destruction.
Wasn't going to last forever.
That's true. In Pshat, it's referring to the Mishkan, not the Beis HaMikdash. And they're saying, yeah, that's the problem. That's the problem. Maybe Yerushalayim was just another city. But in Pshat, it's referring to the Mishkan that they already saw. But either way, otherwise, it's a pure nevuah for the future of what was going to be over here. Now, the kasha is, obviously, it's not a very good song. Song to Asaf. God, the goyim have come into your nachla. They've killed a lot of Jews.
Maybe,
they were matani or heichol.
It's the same answer as with Yekiva. Meaning if this prophecy is true, then the other prophecy is true.
It's not bad. There's got to be something that comes after it. So Gemara asks this question. And the Gemara answers that the answer is that Baruch Hashem destroyed the Beis HaMikdash instead of taking it out on the people itself. Exactly. If you've done Kiddushin, it's in Tosfos on that Chof Tesem of Beis. Right, that's where I mentioned it. Now the only problem with that is what goes on in the next Pasuk. Look at the very next Pasuk. It says, Nosnu is Niblas Abadeko Makalov HaShemayim. They allowed your corpses of your servants to be food to the birds of heaven, to the south of the Echolachai Zoharet, the flesh of your Hasidim to the wild animals of the field. They left unburied. They tell me that Chamim were killed completely, right? And it's all through. So what do you mean? So it must mean that had the Beis HaMikdash not been destroyed, more people would have been killed. But still, that's not a song. The answer of the Gemara doesn't work for the second pasuk. The whole pshat is, thank God God sent his wrath upon the Beis HaMikdash instead of killing the people. But the next pasuk says that the people were killed. So I'm not sure.
Yeah, I
100%. I don't understand that Gemara. I really understand the Gemara. I don't understand what Tosis means when he brings it up over there. It's a very, very strange thing for me that it's that. Now, it's clear as well, right, that not only were the dead killed on the outside, but there were Kohanim that committed suicide because they didn't want to be given over into the hands of the other people and use their powers for evil. There were people that died from the pestilence of all the dead bodies everywhere because corpses sitting out in the street is not sanitary. I know that's a shocker to everyone, right? That it's not going to be sanitary for anyone. And there's so much that goes on over here. I'm sorry? They died from the stench. Yeah, from the actual stench, from all the corpses. You're going to die from that. The disease is going to be rampant. No, you're going to have, you're going to have flies everywhere, and then those flies end up biting somebody else. So all of a sudden, something happens. So obviously, we're going to compare it to a bunch of things over here. There's a king whose difficult son would not obey his father. So what did the father do? In his anger, he entered the son's wedding chamber and tore, cut, demolished everything. The chamber was turned into a heap of refuse, and then he drove out the son. Have I not done a fine thing, the king said? I can rebuild the wedding chamber and bring my kid back. But had I taken my anger out on the kid, I'd never be able to bring my kid back. I totally agree, if there was no death. But since there's death over here, I don't agree with this mashal. I know that I don't agree. I don't understand this mashal. I don't understand what the mashal means. It's totally against what the next pasuk says. I just don't understand what Chazal are trying to get from that.
But you know what? It doesn't say that they killed. It's just that doesn't mean lots of a death of mahal trying. This meaning people who already died, they couldn't bury them because it was such a mess. It's not necessarily that people were actually killed.
I hear you, but we know that people were killed. We know what Nebu Zaradan did. We have tremendous gemaras about what Nebu Zaradan did to the people at that time.
What is the Sukkot? It just says about
water. He's known as Yovav Kabachim. Yeah. No, and the pasuk says at the end.
He's the chief executioner.
Yeah, no, it says at the end how many people they killed.
Right, because of the pool of blood.
Yeah, 50,000, 100,000, whatever. There were hundreds of thousands of people killed.
It could be answered that that was for a separate issue, but it's actually
hard yet 100,000 people killed. You know what I'm saying? That's what I'm saying. I'm so wrong. I'll tell you another shot that they say. The reason why I called it a song is because it's sort of like what you're saying with Rabbi Akiva, that he saw the future. He was able to see that Korach right, was going to come back. That Korach would have Tchias HaMesim along with everybody else. He saw what was going to be in the future. He saw that Korach was going to rise up, and from that he saw that this would need to happen in order for the raising to happen afterward. Somehow he saw that and he knew what was going to have to be over here. Now, you should know Reb Avimi was tremendous in his kibud av ha'aim. Rabbi Avo had a son named Reb Avimi. Avimi used to always take care of him in every way. When Rabbi Avo came to the door and knocked on the door, Avimi would come to the door yelling out. He would, before any of his kids could answer, he'd say, yeah, father, I'm here. And he'd go out there. One time, Rabbi Avo asked him to bring him water. Avimi went to go get the water, and when he brought it to him, his father had fallen asleep. He didn't want to wake up his father, so he stood there holding the water, waiting for his father to wake up. And while he was there, he was zoche to get this pshat. Mizmor l'asaf, kina l'asaf, mipoy l'ish, be a lamentation. And rather, what we end up saying is that he took it out on this instead of that. And that's the idea behind it. He understood it from right over here, the Rabbi Avimi mirrored it because of what he did over there. That's where Tosfos brings it up in Kiddushin, Chaf Tes Amud Beis over there. That's that. Okay.
If the father's sitting in the
answer
for a while,
can
you stand there for a while?
I'm not telling you what the actual halacha is.
We'll get an amazing pshat from you as well.
I can't promise you that. Yeah, probably not. Because now you're doing it only to get the pshat, so no, for sure not. There's another pshat over here. Remember, Yerushalayim Shalmata is connected to Yerushalayim Shalmala. So Yerushalayim down below is connected to Yerushalayim above. Not only was Yerushalayim down below destroyed, Yerushalayim up above was destroyed as well. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu knocked out Yerushalayim up above. No, that doesn't answer the Mizmor. It's just another pshat that they say in this pasuk. I'm sorry?
Yerushalayim up above.
There's Yerushalayim Shalmala, whatever that means, where Michoel is the Kohen Gadol sacrifice and the Shambles of Tzadikim and Mizbeach up above, whatever it means. The Michoel, some Malach is doing, whatever it means. Somehow there's something up above that's able to go through this. And that over there, I'm just going to mention one last thing over here. In Pasuk Beis, it should be, right, that first they made the Basar Chaskechelach, what is it? It should be that the enemy shed their blood. And then afterward, it should mention that they prevented their burial. Because the next pasuk says, Shafu Damam Kamayim. They spilled their blood like water. So your slime around your slime, they ain't covering. Nobody was buried. So why wouldn't it say that first? The Shafu Damam Kamayim. Why not do that first and then say that they were buried? What's going on over here? Why would you say it over here? So the pshat is, the enemy did not bury the dead, and it's forbidden for a corpse to be left overnight in Yerushalayim. The people themselves would move the corpses outside the city for burial, and when they did that, they were attacked and killed by the enemy. So the enemy, even during a time of burial, which normally during times of war, there's always like a break, right, where everybody takes your dead bodies out of the battle, right, and everybody buries them, and then they go back to battle. It's just a ceasefire, right? No ceasefire. They wave the white flag. They do it. They have like flags. It happened everywhere. The only people that didn't do it, by the way, I remember. No. The Genghis Khan and like those people, they didn't care. They just kept fighting, right? And they fought over the dead bodies. There was no such thing, you know. They didn't care about stuff like that. But regardless, oh, that's right. So they could go on.
How many times
did this guy
decide to get during the war?
It was like a. It was a.